So let's start. So first of all, I want to thank Jorge for giving me the opportunity to present my recent work. And here, I would like to introduce you to some new recent progress on the mathematical structure behind loop quantum gravity. So now let's come to page 2. So let's first do some work. Let's review some basic facts about harmonic oscillators. Well, in harmonic oscillator, we have very simple two-dimensional phase space with a simple synthetic form of just dpdq. And inside such a synthetic space, we have the Lagrangian submanifold, which is a constant energy circle, and just 1/2 t squared plus q squared equals e. And then we can perform the quantization, very standard quantization quantum mechanics, to replace q to the multiplication operator and p to the derivative operator. And also, we can define the Hamiltonian operator, just replacing the classical expression for the energy by corresponding operators. And then we are considering the Schrodinger equation, or energy eigenvalue equation, and we find it's nothing but the quantization of the Lagrangian submanifold, the quantization of that curve. And just by replacing the classical expression for the curve into a quantum operator equation. And we would like to solve the wave function, standard way to get the wave function perturbatively is by using WKB. And this WKB expansion is a right wave function to the exponential and a power expansion of h bar. And the leading contribution is the contour integral of Liouville 1 form, PDQ. And such a contour integral is defined along the contour in the Lagrangian submanifold. And because Lagrangian submanifold is defined by a quadratic equation, when we solve p from q, we get the square root. And in front of square root, there's a plus minus sign. It simply means that our Lagrangian submanifold has two branches labeled by plus minus. And we have two WPB solutions according to the two branches. So let's come to the next slide. So we can lift our knowledge of harmonic oscillator to a more mathematical level and talk about quantum curve. So here we are considering a complex synthetic manifold. It is a complex manifold with complex dimension 2n. N is integer. And on such a manifold, we have a complex structure and also have a holomorphic synthetic structure, omega. And because we have complex structure, we can define the holomorphic coordinates, what we call V and U, and they are also synthetic with respect to the holomorphic synthetic structure, in the sense that the synthetic structure can be written in a simple expression just for dV with dU, dU holomorphically. And inside such a synthetic manifold, there is a holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold. And it is Lagrangian, means that the synthetic form vanishes on such a manifold. And it's also of middle dimension. It is a holomorphic submanifold in the sense that it can be written at least locally as a polynomial equation. It's a polynomial of exponential u and exponential v. So here we are interested in such a specific type of Lagrangian submanifold. You will see later on this is exactly the type we should be interested in. And then we can perform the standard scheme of quantization by quantizing u and v to multiplication operator and derivative operator, just like harmonic oscillators. And then we can quantize the Lagrangian submanifold by simply quantizing the polynomial equation into an operator constraint equation. And the goal of such a game is to solve the wave function satisfying such an operator constraint equation. Okay, then this is our machine of Lagrangian curve, of quantum curve. And let's come to the slide number 4. And it turns out that such a mathematical structure is exactly the one underlying loop quantum gravity and also relates, and it is agreed, relates loop quantum gravity to many other branches of physics and mathematics. Okay, and then let's come to slide number 5. So let's be more specific and consider the system being a modularized rate of flat connection on two surfaces. And this is the system we are interested in. and it is our phase rate. And so here we consider close two surfaces, sigma g, and with certain number of genus g, and such a two surface is decorated by a set of closed curves, what we call d, and such that when we cut the closed two surface along those curves, we get a set of n holes here. And let's look at the figure on the right. So this is the example we often encounter in this talk. And this is the closed two surface with genus 6. And we specify a set of 10 meridian closed curves with those blue simple small curves, what we call CAD. And when we cut these two surfaces along those curves, and we get a set of five four holes here. And we consider the complex complexity manifold, which is the modulized phase of flat connections on such a two surface, this structure group at L2C. And here what I mean by flat connection simply means we consider the connection field on such a two surface and with managing curvature. Okay. And then such a synthetic manifold has beautiful structures. Firstly, it's a Hilbert-Taylor manifold. It has naturally three complex structures. And firstly, the first complex structure, what we call I, is induced from the complex structure of two surfaces. And the second complex structure, J, is induced from complex group. That is more important in our game. And the third complex structure, K, is simply a product of I times J. And also on such a manifold has a natural synthetic structure, which is famous, Atiyah-Bose-Hausmann synthetic structure. And also such a synthetic structure can be obtained from a Hamiltonian analysis of Chen Simon theory on three manifolds foliated by two surfaces. Okay, let's come to the next slide. On such a modulized space, we can define the holomorphic coordinates. They are holomorphic with respect to complex structure J. And so because we have defined those set of closed curves on such a two surface, and we can define the so-called complex Finkel-Nielsen coordinates, and it associates each closed curve to a set of two complex numbers. And X and Y, X is called Finkel-Nielsen length variable, and Y is called Finkel-Nielsen twist variable. And the Finkel-Nielsen length variable is defined simply by the holonomy eigenvalue along the curve C. And because for each flat connection, we can evaluate holonomy along those meridian curves, and the holonomy gives 2x2 matrices. Generically, we can always diagonalize such a matrix, and we get eigenvalue, and this eigenvalue is a coordinate known as Finkel-Nielsen length coordinate. And secondly, we also have Finkel-Nielsen twist coordinate. It's a little more technical to define the twist variable, but you can understand it by considering that this y is the conjugate momentum with respect to x, with respect to the holomorphic synthetic structure, the Atiyah-Bose-Hausmann synthetic structure. Therefore, the holomorphic synthetic structure can be written in a simple expression, d log x and d log y, d log y versus d log x. So here, rigorously speaking, x and y, they are not synthetic coordinates, but rather log x and log y, they are synthetic coordinates. And also, in general, these x and y, they are not complete coordinates, because when we cut the closed two surfaces along those curves, we get a set of n holes here. And there is also some additional coordinates penetrating the flat connection on n holes here. So in general, the modulized space of flat connection on a closed surface with genus G is of complex dimension 6G minus 6. So let's come to slide number 7. So in such a phase space, we can define holomorphic Lagrangian submanifolds by considering three manifolds. So we consider three manifolds such that the boundary of the three manifold is the closed two surface. And then the modulized phase of flat connection on such a three manifold is precisely the Lagrangian submanifold inside the modulized phase of flat connection on two surfaces. And then locally, the Lagrangian submanifold can be written in terms of holomorphic polynomial equations of x and y. The polynomial is of x and y. So here, as we said before, x and y, they are not synthetic coordinates, but log x and log y are synthetic coordinates. Therefore, this polynomial is a polynomial of exponentiated synthetic coordinates. This is exactly the type of curve we looked at before, we considered, we mentioned before. And now we focus on something called graph complement free manifold in Swiss here. So here, such a graph complement free manifold is defined by an embedded graph inside a Swiss here, and then we move a tubular open neighborhood of such a graph from such a Swiss here. And now here it is an example, so we consider our so-called gamma 5 graph. This gamma 5 graph is defined by 5 vertices and connect those vertices by 10 edges. We embed such a graph inside this sphere, and then we move the tubular neighborhood of such a graph. We get the free manifold, what we call gamma 5 graph complement. And it's just simply labeled by this sphere removing gamma 5. And then the boundary of such a free manifold is exactly our previous genus 6 closed school surface. So next slide, please. So then the quantization of flat connection on free manifold can be carried out by our quantization scheme for the Lagrangian submanifold. So here our base space is a flat modulized space of flat connection on two surfaces. And we have the synthetic structure, D log Y, red D log X. And here we have the logarithmic coordinates, U and V. U is log X, V is log Y. They are holomorphic synthetic coordinates. So here we view U is the position variable and V is momentum. And we quantize those holomorphic synthetic coordinates by standard in quantum mechanics. So U is multiplication and V is derivative. And then we quantize the Lagrangian submanifold by simply replacing the classical expression for the polynomial equation for the Lagrangian submanifold by corresponding operator constraint equation. And then what we want to have is the solution for such operator constraint equation. And these holomorphic solutions are the physical state for quantum flat connections on three manifolds, and it quantized SL2T Chern-Simon theory on three manifolds. And let's come to the slide number 9. And so, sorry, any questions?
Since SL2T is non-compact, is there a problem with normalizing the state so it would be in a product?
For the inner product, this program, I don't think is complete. Complete yet. But for getting the wave function, yes, we can. There's a way to get the wave function by something called state integral model, and to write the wave function as a finite dimensional integral. But for the inner product, I think one can consider it in the formal level, just in usual topological field theory context. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, So then let's come to slide number 9. And so why we are interested in such a system? So we are interested in this flat system of flat connections in three dimensions because we have recently some interesting correspondence between flat connections on three manifolds and in visual geometry in four dimensions. So here, again, we consider our gamma 5 graph complement on the left-hand side. This is our three manifold. And on the right-hand side, the corresponding four manifolds is the single forcing flag. And this four simplex, as we know, is elementary building block for the simplicial decomposition of arbitrary four manifolds. And the statement is that the we consider a class, so what we have is a class of SL2T flat connections on such a three manifold, actually such a class of flat connections describe the so such a class of SL2C flat connection on three manifolds actually describes the Lorentzian four-dimensional four-simplex geometry on four manifolds with constant curvature lambda. So this class of flat connections is specified by the boundary data, and so we have to impose some boundary data on the boundary of such a three manifold to specify such a flat connection. After imposing boundary conditions, the flat connection satisfying the boundary conditions describes the four simplex geometry. Okay, this is the general statement of our results. Let's come to the next slide. So what is the boundary condition we should impose? So the boundary condition should be imposed on the modelized space of flat connection on two surfaces, which is the boundary of the three manifolds. So this modulized space of flat connection on two surfaces is contains the space of all possible boundary values of flat connection on three dimensions. And this is the boundary, the two closed two surfaces we show on the figure is the boundary of three manifolds. And then we have decorated the surface by 10 meridian closed curves, CAD. So once we cut the closed two surface along those curves, we get five four-hole spheres. So we have mentioned that before. And then we associate each four-hole sphere with an SU2 subgroup of SL2C. So different four-hole spheres, in principle, associate with different SU2 subgroups of SL2C. And then we consider the boundary conditions we impose with the following. So we consider the SL2C flat connection on such a two surface that reduce the SU2 on each four-hole sphere, respect to the SU2 subgroup associated with the four-hole sphere. And then it doesn't mean that the flat connection we consider are SU2 on the whole closed two surface. Simply because on different four-hole spheres, it reduced to different SU2 subgroups. So in the end, the flat connections satisfying the boundary conditions are still SL2C flat connections, but just they reduced SU2 locally on each four-hole sphere. And such a design of boundary conditions actually relates to something called simplicity constraint in loop quantum gravity. And it is exactly the simplicity constraint in these contexts. So, okay, let's come to the next slide. So here I'm not going to give you a detailed proof for the correspondence, but I'm going to give you a key idea about why it can happen. So actually, such a correspondence relating objects in different dimensions come from even topological level. So it comes from some isomorphism between two types of fundamental groups. So on one side, on the left hand side, we have the fundamental group of D minus one manifold. So usually we consider this D minus one manifold is the D minus one sphere with certain defects. So here we have the fundamental group of such a manifold, D minus one manifold. And on the right-hand side, we have another fundamental group. So this is the fundamental group of one skeleton of a d-dimensional polyhedron. So here, the d-manifold is a d-dimensional polyhedron. So here, the fundamental group we consider is the fundamental group of the one skeleton of the d-dimensional polyhedron. And it turns out that such a two fundamental groups are isomorphic. Then once we have the isomorphism between these two fundamental groups, then on the left-hand side, we have flat connection. Because flat connection, we have flat connection on D minus one manifold, and because flat connection is simply a representation of the fundamental group to gateway, onto gateway. And then it's a map from the fundamental group to the gateway. And on the right hand side, because on D manifold we have some geometry, we have geometry on D manifold, and then the geometry induces a spin connection on D manifold, then we can evaluate the holonomy of the spin connection along the one skeleton of the polyhedron. then the spin connection is becomes a representation of this, the other fundamental group living in higher dimensions to the gate group. So then we have such a commuting triangle which relates the spin connection to the flat connection by the isomorphism of fundamental group. So let's come to the next slide. So these the content of the previous slide may be a little bit abstract. Let's come to the simplest example to illustrate such a relation. So this is the relation between four-hole sphere, which is the two-manifold, and tetrahedron, which is the three-manifold. And on four-hole sphere, you can easily work out the fundamental group. The fundamental group of four-hole sphere is generated by four loops. Each loop can go around the hole of the sphere, and once we product those four loops, we get trivial loops, which is very simple. And on the other side, for the tetrahedron, the fundamental group of one skeleton of tetrahedron is also very simple. We can specify four closed passes, just like the figure on the right. And when you product those closed passes, and you get simply trivial paths. It's very easy to show because all the edges just simply cancel. And then it's obvious that such a two fundamental groups are exactly the same. They are isomorphic to each other. And then on the left, we have flat connection on four-hole sphere, and on the right, we have spin connection on tetrahedron. Then they are related by such an isomorphism. And we can go into higher dimensions, one dimension higher. Let's come to the next slide. Consider in the three-dimensional graph complement, three manifolds and forcing sets. And you can also work out the fundamental group for the three manifolds. It's straightforward to write down. To find the generator, they are the closed loop around the edges. And on the other side, for the forcing flex, you find the closed passes, just like in the same pattern as tetrahedron case. They are closed passes going around the triangle. And then you work out the algebraic relation, you find they are exactly the same. And they are isomorphic. So two fundamental groups, they are exactly isomorphic. And then also we have flat connection on three manifolds, and also we have spin connection on four manifolds, and they are related by such isomorphism. And so let's come to slide 14. So here we can somehow solve the spin connection by the flat connection of three manifolds. But here, what we get is not exactly the smooth spin connection on four manifolds. They are actually a set of discrete holonomies along closed passes on one skeleton. So we can ask the question, how much do they know about the geometry? So in general, they know very little. But once we have input some additional information, then they know a lot about the geometry. So here, the input we are going to study is we consider the constant curvature forcing flex, whose two surfaces are flatly embedded surfaces. So what I mean by flatly embedded simply means that the extrinsic curvature of such a surface just vanishes. And then we have the following result, that given two surfaces flatly embedded in a constant curvature space, the holonomy of spin connection along the boundary of such a surface has very simple expression that relates the area of the surface and also the normal of the surface. However, this normal is located at the base point of the holonomy, because when we evaluate holonomy along the boundary, we have to specify a base point. Then this normal in this formula is the normal of the surface located at the boundary, at the base point of the holonomy. Therefore, once we have the holonomy data of spin connection, we can read from the holonomy data the area of the surfaces and also the normal of the surfaces. And then those area and normal data determine uniquely the forcing flex geometry. So here, let's come to the next slide. So here, let's summarize.
Hello, question. Is the constant lambda related to the constant curvature of space that you have, or is it?
Yeah.
What is lambda? Is it just a constant curvature?
Yeah,
okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So here, let's summarize the classical correspondence we have. So firstly, we have the one-to-one correspondence between the flat connection on four-hole sphere with structure group PSU2 and constant curvature tetrahedron geometry with either spherical or hyperbolic. So both spherical and hyperbolic geometry are included, tetrahedron geometry are included in our module aspect. And secondly, there's one-to-one correspondence between a flat connection on graph complement three manifold taking value PSL2C satisfying the boundary condition and constant curvature four simplex geometry with either positive constant curvature or negative constant curvature, and it's Lorentzian geometry. And here, the structure group is PSU2 and PSL2C simply because we ask for a one-to-one correspondence. We can also consider SU2 or SL2C, then we don't have one-to-one correspondence, but rather covering that. Then there are a few remarks. So firstly, here we only consider the non-degenerate geometry. This statement is satisfied when geometry is non-degenerate. And secondly, the, from this one-to-one correspondence, we have the relation, so we have the equivalence between the flat connection holonomy around the defect and the spin connection holonomy around the phase. It's simply a consequence of our isomorphism of fundamental group. So you can see it manifestly from the relation between four-hole sphere and tetrahedron, because each loop go around the surface, go around the hole, map to the closed passes, go around the face, go around the triangle in the tetrahedron. Okay, let's come to the next slide. So here, because of this correspondence, we can derive some dictionary between the coordinates. For flat connection, we have our previously defined Fincher-Newton coordinate, x and y, and here it turns out that the Fincher-Newton length variable is related to the triangle area of the four simplex, and Fincher-Newton fifth variable, they are related, they relate to the four-dimensional dihedral angle with respect to the tetrahedron on the boundary of the four simplex. And here it's interesting to see that for the flat modalized phase of flat connections, the Fincher-Newton length and twist, they are conjugate variables. And for the geometry, the area relates to the metric of the geometry, and the dihedral angle relates to extrinsic curvature of the geometry. And then they are also conjugate variables in general relativity. And also, the Fincher-Newton variable in this case, they are not complete in the modalized space. There are a few other coordinates parametrizing the flat connection on four-hole sphere. And those flat connection coordinates, they are parametrizing on the other side the shape of the tetrahedron on the boundary of the four-hole sphere. Okay, so next slide, please. And so before we finishing the classical part of the correspondence, there's final remark about something called parity pair. So there's the fact that given a flat connection in the modalized space of flat connection on the three manifold satisfying our boundary condition, then it associates a unique another flat connection in our modalized space, and satisfying exactly the same boundary condition with the same boundary data, XAB, XA, and YA. XAB is Fincher-Newton length, and XA and YA are four-hole sphere coordinates. But they have different twist variables, YAB and YAB twiddle. So they are different, the twist variables are only different by a inverse. So one exponential of theta, the other one is the exponential of minus theta. And those two flat connections, because both of them satisfying the same boundary condition, the same boundary data, and both of them corresponding to four simplex geometry. And turns out they satisfy, and they correspond to exactly the same four simplex geometry, but opposite four-dimensional orientation. So that's why we call A and A twiddle to be a parity pair flat connection. So here we can represent such a fact by such a figure in for our phase. Here, in such a diagram, we have axis of x and y, the synthetic coordinates, and we have the red curve representing the Lagrangian submanifold, which is the modular space of flat connection on free manifold, on graph complement free manifold. And then once we impose boundary data, xAB, xA, and yA, we have a plane in such a phase space which intersects the Lagrangian submanifold. And the fact about parity pair simply means that the plane of boundary data intersects with Lagrangian submanifold at exactly 2 points. And each point on the Lagrangian submanifold is a flat connection satisfying the boundary condition. And these 2 points are exactly the two intersection points are exactly the parity pair. Okay, so that's all for the classical part of correspondence. So let's come to the next slide. We come to the second, the quantum sphere. So classically, we have the correspondence between flat connection on free manifold and force simplex geometry. And we can put quantum on both sides of this equation. So we have the quantum flat connection on free manifold describing the quantum force simplex geometry. And then we reveal our gain for quantization of four-dimensional geometry into the quantization of flat connection on free manifold. And we can run our machine of quantization of holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold to quantize flat connection on free manifold. Let's come to the next slide. Let's recall just briefly our quantization of Lagrangian submanifold. So we have our phase space, which is moduli space of flat connection on two surfaces. We have a very simple expressed synthetic structure. We have the holomorphic coordinates u and v. They are logarithmic coordinates of x and y. And u is the position variable and v is momentum variable. We can do the standard quantization just like quantum mechanics. And we quantize the Lagrangian submanifold by replace the classical polynomial equation for the Lagrangian submanifold by the corresponding quantum operator equation. And we are going to solve the holomorphic. We are going to solve such operator constraint equation. The solution, this holomorphic solution set of U, are the physical state for quantum flat connections, and also the quantum state for SA2C flat connections. Okay, so let's come to the next slide. So the standard way to find the solution is by using WKB. So just like Harmonic oscillator. The WKB solution for, in this context, have a special name. It's called holomorphic 3D block. And this holomorphic 3D block, because it's WKB solutions, it can be written as asymptotic expansion in H-bar. And then the leading order contribution is contour integral of Liouville one form VDU. And such a contour is inside the Lagrangian submanifold. And here, each WKB solution is labeled by branches of Lagrangian submanifold. And alpha is the branch, labeled the branch. And given the position variable u and also and the branch alpha, we have a point on the Lagrangian submanifold. And therefore, a pair u and alpha corresponds to a unique SL2C flat connection on three manifolds. And the holomorphic 3D block defined in this way has two kinds of ambiguity. The first ambiguity comes from because it's defined by the logarithmic coordinates. So when we, for example, when we replace u, when we replace v by v plus 2 pi I, which is different lead of logarithmic coordinates, one gets additional term on the exponential, which is additional factor, exponential 2 pi over h bar times u. And secondly, it has another ambiguity, which is we only specify the endpoint of the contour integration, and the endpoint of contour integration located on the branch alpha, but we didn't specify the starting point of the contour integration. But the different choice of starting point of contour integration gives only the overall phase of to the wave function. But in quantum mechanics, the overall phase is anyway ambiguous. So the second ambiguity is not so important. So let's come to the next slide. So then, because of the to have the quantum correspondence of to have the quantum counterpart of the correspondence between flat connection and force geometry, so we claim that the wave function, the holomorphic 3D block we considered in last slide, actually describes the quantum four-dimensional geometry. So here we should quantize the Lagrangian submanifold as we did before, and then we should impose the boundary conditions. Because classically, the boundary conditions select the flat connection of three manifolds, which describes the four-dimensional geometry. And once we impose the boundary conditions select the branch alpha, such that the flat connection on such a branch corresponds to constant curvature four-dimensional geometry, four simplex geometry. And then the branch alpha, the geometrical branch, corresponds to four-dimensional geometry, naturally associated with its parity partner, alpha, what we call alpha pseudo, such that once we have, let's look at the figure on the right, once we have the plane defined at boundary data, it intersects these two branches, and the two intersection points are exactly the parity pair. And now we define our holomorphic 3D block for the branch alpha, selected by the boundary condition, with the reference at the branch alpha pseudo, the parity pair branch. Then we call such a holomorphic 3D block with the quantization of four-dimensional simplicial geometry. And here, this is WKB expansion for such a wave function, and the leading order is a contour integral and with the starting point on branch alpha pseudo and end point on branch alpha. So here, because we specify the starting point, the contour, then the second ambiguity, the usual wave function, overall phase ambiguity in the last slide is not there. So we remove the second ambiguity. So let's come to the next slide.
Can I ask a question on 21, okay, please? So you showed this in the figure, the red curve is the Lagrangian submanifold that you're looking at. And you have got this vertical line showing the two points, right? The parity related to each other. But if I move this black line to the left, then of course I come to a point at which the two parity related points actually coincide.
Yeah.
So what is happening there?
Yeah, okay. This is something called Stokes phenomena. And so once you go to the, so here you have two intersections, and then when you move your plane and to the left, and these two intersection points coincide. And that point is called it's a singularity. And then when you move further, then you should have the holomorphic block should transform, and there's something called Stokes wall, and there's some jam for.
I don't know the names, but I just want to know mathematically what is happening. So are you saying that this point is excluded from your consideration?
Yeah, here in this game, this point are excluded. So this point could actually, if you go to such a singularity, those singularity actually correspond to very degenerate geometry. So this, in our game, those points are excluded. We don't consider this phenomenon.
So exactly. So the geometry, if you try to construct the geometry corresponding to that point, it will be degenerate. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, let's come to the slide number 22. And so here, so this wave function realized the relation above, which is quantum geometry, quantization of geometry, is actually quantization of gravity. So because when we consider the semi-classical limit of such a holomorphic 3D block, what we get exactly the discrete Einstein gravity in four dimensions. So when we take the semi-classical limit, h bar goes to zero, and the leading contribution of the asymptotic expansion gives exactly the Reggie action on the constant curvature force simplex. And downstairs, the bottom formula is the Reggie action on the constant curvature force simplex with cosmological constant. Okay, so to get this result is actually not very hard. So let's come to next slide to give you a brief idea how to get such a result. So the leading
I ask a question on slide 22? Yeah. So we're talking about semi-classical gravity, but on the right-hand side, you only have constant curvature. right? So, for example, if the curvature is positive, then it's just the sitter. It's not the sitter with fluctuations or anything like that. It's pure the sitter. Isn't that correct?
It's a single forcing flex. Yeah.
Right. So it's really classical. Nothing semi-classical about it.
There is a correction, quantum correction. So there is a log H bar term. There is also H bar correction on the right.
Okay, but so what is the interpretation? Is the interpretation that this is supposed to represent what? It's supposed to represent just the Dissita geometry, or is it supposed to represent Dissita geometry with first-order quantum fluctuations? And if it is first-order quantum fluctuations, then is it consistent with what we know about the first-order quantum fluctuations about the Dissita geometry?
So the interpretation of this wave function is that the leading order is the classical geometry, but there is a quantum correction. The leading contribution is the classical action for the geometry, but of course, because we consider a single forcing, and here at this level, we just write down formula for the single forcing flex. So the leading order is that.
But the sort of outstanding question always has been in spin forms and so on, how is this related with what we know to be the fluctuations, right? I mean, if you give me the sitter and you just give to quantum field theory, they know what the gravitational fluctuations are. They know what spin two fields on the sitter are, how many degrees of freedom it has, and so on and so forth. Is any of that information captured in the O of log of H bar terms that you have got here, or is this something completely different and non-perturbative and doesn't have anything to do with the 2 degrees of freedom propagating on the sitter background?
This is so far we didn't study that. So I mean, in principle, what we want to say is that this is non-perturbative definition of quantization of gravity in the discrete level. But for the high order corrections, we haven't studied order by order yet. But in principle, they are quantum corrections, and I'm not sure they are really the same as like standard Euclidean gravity. But also it's hard to check because at this level it's only discrete gravity. So to check the spin two mode and so on, this is something not very easy to do for discrete gravity.
Let me just for clarity just understand. So at the moment you are not put any dynamics. Is that correct? Doesn't know if it is in fact Einstein action or some other action or higher derivative theory or anything like that. Is that correct? At this stage?
Well, here there's no higher derivative term. So at this level, there's no higher derivative term. This is just the leading order is just Einstein gravity.
But are you saying that leading order Einstein gravity is coming out? I mean, it's not really Einstein gravity, right? It's just the sitter, just one solution. Is that correct? Understanding is that your all considerations were completely kinematical so far. Right.
Yeah, in that sense, in the geometry, because we are considering a single forcing flex. So once there will be one slide that I briefly talk about the complex case, then over there you have more solutions. You have more geometry, and all the geometry are included. Because here you only have a single forcing flex, then of course. There is only a constant curvature geometry.
Right, but what I'm missing is all your considerations had no field equations or dynamics or Lagrangian so far. It was just looking at kinematical representation, geometrical representation between this flat connection on the other one side and simplicial geometry on the other side. Right?
Because for example, you can also think about spin forms and spin form once so the dynamics implement by summing over J, the last sum of the spin form. So here
also vertex amplitude. What you specify vertex amplitude there, right? So are you specifying the analog of the vertex amplitude anywhere, or is it all just at the kinematical level?
Yeah, this is the vertex amplitude. So this is analog of vertex amplitude.
Wait a minute. Abhay?
Yeah.
Abhay, you criticized me 15 years ago on the same point. The point is that the connection is flat or constant. So this is an implementation of the self-dual condition that F equals lambda sigma. And it's, as far as I can tell, doesn't have the gravitational degrees of freedom in it. Is that right, Hussein? You're just implementing F equals lambda sigma.
Good. So it does not have gravitational degrees of freedom in it. Good. Good. So that answers my previous question. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, this is only a... Yeah, okay. So let's come to next slide then. Okay, so here I show you a little derivation about the asymptotic, about why it can happen. So the leading order contribution is the synthetic contour integral for the contour integral for the Liouville one form UDU. And so here this is because of WKD, this is what we call I alpha twiddle is the a leading contribution of the holomorphic CD block, and alpha is the branch, the endpoint of the where this contour ends, and alpha twiddle is the place where this contour starts. And then to evaluate such an integral, we make a variation of the boundary data, which means we shift to the plane for the boundary defined by the boundary data. So you can see on the figure on the left, so there are two planes. One is labeled by U1, the other one is labeled by U plus delta U. And we shift the plane of the boundary data. And then the variation of the this contour integral is simply given by two small contour integrals along small contours. Between which we call C and C twiddle, which are contours between and cut it by the two planes. And then this is so we should perform two contour integrals and for the synthetic Liouville one form. And then it's not hard to see that such a two contour integral actually is approximately the synthetic area of the square. The square confined by the two planes. And then the synthetic area of the square is just the product of the two sides, which is delta U times VAB minus V twiddle AB. And these VAB and V twiddle AB, they are the function using twist variable for the flat connections in the parity pair, for the parity pair. So let's come to the next slide and recall our dictionary between the coordinates. So we have the geometrical interpretation of the flat connection coordinates. So we have the function length variable exponential of U, and it relates to the triangle area, so as we mentioned before. And we also have the function twist variable, which is exponential of V, and it relates to the four-dimensional dihedral angle. And we also have the parity pair flat connection, another function, different function using twist variable, but only different by an inverse. So for y, it has minus theta on the exponential, and for y twiddle, it has plus theta on the exponential. So here, we have put in all the Chern-Simons coupling constant t to make the formula complete. And then we plug in our dictionary of coordinates back to our expression. Then to the next slide, the first formula is the result of the variation of the contour integral, and we get it's given by delta area times theta, and there's the second term only taking discrete value. And such a variation can be integrated by using Schlafly identity. And such an integration, as you can see, is very easy to be carried out, and we get the final result. And we have the leading order for the holomorphic 3D block, and it contains the first term, which is exactly the Lorentzian Reggie action in four dimensions. And the second term is the integration constant. And the third term, only taking discrete value, it comes from exactly the first ambiguity of the holomorphic 3D block we mentioned before. It's coming from different leaps of logarithmic coordinates. Okay, however, because in general, the Chern-Simons coupling T is complex. And so here, the leading order contribution is not oscillatory. So for us, we would like to do quantum gravity. Maybe we like to have oscillatory phase for the leading order contribution. To have oscillatory phase, we simply consider full SL2C transformal theory with both holomorphic and anti-holomorphic contributions. So we have holomorphic blocks, and we also put in the anti-holomorphic, corresponding anti-holomorphic blocks. And then the resulting asymptotic, leading order asymptotic expression is oscillatory phase, and the first term is again red reaction, and we can read the coupling constant from the constant in front, and we identify the effective gravitational coupling related to the imaginary part of the transimal coupling. And then there is an integration constant, but this constant is not important because the constant in front of, adding a constant on action doesn't change the equation of motion. And the third term only taking discrete value, and this comes from the ambiguity of holomorphic theory block. So suppose we want to define the wave function of four geometry with no result, which is independent of such ambiguity. So we have to impose some quantization condition for such a term by asking such a term is 2 pi h bar z. Therefore, exponential of 2 pi I z is just 1, which is independent of such term. And after a simple calculation, you can see that such a quantization condition is completely fulfilled by loop quantum gravity consideration. Once we ask the quantization of area, the area is quantized by the area is the taking value of half integer spins, and then such a quantization condition is completely fulfilled. And also there is another interesting regime where we ask the transimal coupling T is purely imaginary. Then we can see that such a quantization condition is trivially fulfilled, and because this term simply vanishes, and this term only depends on the real part of T, and this term just vanishes. So in this case, there's no quantization condition needed. So we don't need quantization condition for T, which is purely imaginary. Sorry?
Is it a Lorentzian case? Is it for Lorentzian signature?
This is, sorry, can you say again?
This is for Lorentzian signature.
Yeah, this is in Lorentzian signature.
For Euclidean signature, there would be a quantization of the emergency constant.
Well, I mean, here, okay. So here what we are considering is, we are considering the transimal analytic continuous transimal here in principle. So those holomorphic 3D blocks, they are defined by an analytic continuation of transimal theory. So there's no quantization. Maybe you are talking about, so what quantization condition you are considering? So what you are saying?
In case.
Yeah, this quantization condition is not here. So we don't consider quantize. Well, I mean, here, this transimal coupling T is completely imaginary, completely complex. It's arbitrary complex number, in principle.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying, had you quantized the Euclidean theory, you would have found the old results that the emergency parameter is quantized.
The Euclidean. You mean quantizing Euclidean simplicial geometry?
Yes.
Well, in that case, there's no... So all this derivation knows nothing about enumerated parameter. So in that case, I would say it's exactly the same.
Okay, thanks.
And so here you can see because this regime T is purely imaginary in loop quantum gravity terminology, as you see next slide. So this regime corresponds to Barbera unit parameter goes to infinity. And usually such a limit is singular. However, in this game, we see that all these derivations know nothing about Barbera unit parameter, then such a regime is completely regular. The only difference is that there's no quantization condition for area anymore. We don't need quantization condition for area anymore.
So could I just ask a slightly different question on the same answer, 25? Lee nicely explained to us, and I thought you agreed, that what you had done so far until transparency 24 was in some sense kinematic, in the sense that one is just, there is no gravitational degrees of freedom, one is only looking at the condition F is equal to lambda times, what was it, some condition on F which is like constant curvature condition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then suddenly now, one is talking about Newton's constant, and one is talking about Regge action, which really is sort of coming from Einstein-Hilbert action. So where did that information come in? Where was it fed in your framework? I mean, that's a key point that I'm missing from the beginning, and it would be very nice if I understood that.
Well, I'm here because to first show you the simple story, I mean, I have to start from a single force intellect level. And you will see maybe three slides after that, and actually all these things generalize to arbitrary simplicial complex. And there, arbitrary geometry are there. And then,
at the moment you're looking at single simplex, right? And still you're being able to identify Newton's constant. So you're still, somehow, the theory knows about something about Einstein's gravity versus some other gravity. And where did that information get sort of fed in?
Well, the leading order, well, okay, so here, the leading order contribution gives Einstein-Hilbert's action, right? And just because on the single force intellect, the geometry is only constant curvature geometry. However, and once we generalize the same game to simplicial complex, and there's also three manifolds corresponding to arbitrary simplicial complex, and then you see the leading order contribution for the holomorphic 3D block is still Einstein-Hilbert gravity, Einstein-Hilbert action, and with the same coupling constant in front. And that action is not only for constant curvature geometry, it's arbitrary simplicial geometry. Only the simplex, a single simplex, is constant curvature, but you can approximate arbitrary simplicial arbitrary for geometry by using simplicity.
So if the single simplex is constant curvature, then is there any real meaning in identifying Newton's constant? I mean, I'm missing something here, because if in fact, for the simple single simplex, you're just doing kinematics, right? You're just constant curvature thing. And yet one is talking about Einstein action. Constant curvature is pure mathematical exercise, I mean, the calculation.
Yeah, but
they don't know
but
anything about field equations.
Yes,
and yet you're promulgating the field equations.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I mean, in a single force simplex level, maybe to identify G Newton is questionable, but, I mean, we can identify it because we know the general result, because we know the complex, arbitrary complex, and also the way to make it dynamical.
Okay, thank you very much.
So, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, let's come to next slide. Then it's time to and talk about more concrete relation with loop quantum gravity. So all our previous discussion was kind of a dual formulation of loop quantum gravity. So some time ago, we have studied some little bit different story, which is SLTP Transimion theory on the whole free sphere, but with certain insertion of Wilson graph operators. And we define the Transimion evaluation of such a Wilson graph operator by a path integral expression, and what we call Z gamma 5 here. And such a Wilson graph operator are carrying a unitary representation of SLTC in principal series on Wilson lines. And then so it turns out that those Wilson graph operators impose exactly the right boundary condition on graph complement. The boundary condition imposed by those Wilson graph operators are exactly the same as before, as we discussed a few minutes before. And also the boundary data, we can have some expression for the boundary data. For example, the Fink-Newton length variable, XAB, are relating to the representation label, GAB, of the Wilson graph operator. And here, gamma is the usual bivariate unit parameter contained by this Wilson graph operator. And here in this game, the gamma has to be equal to the ratio between imaginary part of T and real part of T. So here you can see, once we ask T to be purely imaginary, this transdiamond coupling to be purely imaginary, then gamma goes to infinity. This is the limit here. And in this limit, in this game, such a limit is completely singular. But the game we just done before is completely regular. And then because of, here because of this relation between X, the Finkel-Newton length variable FAB and the representation label, we can see that the semi-classical limit in this game here is actually a double scaling limit. So the reason is that what we did before for the semi-classical limit is that taking h bar goes to zero, but keep the boundary data invariant. So here, when we take h bar goes to zero, in order to keep boundary data xab invariant, we have to compensate and take j goes to infinity and make j times h bar fixed. So this is exactly the double scaling limit we should imposed for this that gamma phi, and because of exactly because of the boundary condition imposed by Wilson Graf operator is exactly the same as before, then it's not very hard to imagine that this that gamma phi, this transdiamond evaluation of Wilson Graf, gives exactly the same semi-classical limit as the 3D block, which is classical Einstein radiation as the leading order contribution. So let's come to the next slide. And for this that gamma 5, we have that, so this that gamma 5 can be viewed as deformation of EPIL thin form amplitude, because when we're taking the decoupling limit, transdiamond coupling T goes to infinity, and this that gamma 5 reduces back to EPIL thin form amplitude. Because when we decouple the transdiamond coupling and the transdiamond connection become trivial, and the path integral, the previous path integral, localized at the trivial connection on CCF. And then the result is just EPIL uniform amplitude. And then, so by double scaling limit, and this, that gamma 5 goes to the radiation, which is a cosmological constant. And also, for EPIL uniform amplitude, when we take large J limit, and it becomes a radiation on flat, for flat forces. And then we have such a commuting square. And because of the relation of the spinform amplitude and also transdiamond, so such a relation motivates us, actually promote the transdiamond 3D block we studied before to be a wave function, which is to be a wave function or spinform amplitude of four-dimensional loop quantum gravity to interpret those holomorphic 3D blocks satisfying boundary conditions to be a wave function of four-dimensional loop quantum gravity. And it has certain advantages rather than that gamma 5 transdiamond evaluation of recent graph, for example, and it has well-definedness, it has finiteness, and rather, however, it's hard to see that gamma 5 to be finite because it's defined only by a path integral, and there's a more rigorous way to define holomorphic, however, to define the holomorphic 3D block, C is actually finite. And however, such a promotion of holomorphic 3D block motivated us to identify or generalize the spin network data to the flat connection data on closed two surface with certain quantization conditions imposed. So however, here, I don't have more time to discuss such a perspective. So let's come to next slide. So here, because Abai asked me about the perspective related to generalized story to arbitrary centrifugal complex. So here, we can generalize in the following way. So for arbitrary four-dimensional centrifugal complex, we can associate three manifolds. And in principle, we can generate infinite number of three manifolds which correspond to infinite different centrifugal complexes in four dimensions. And the way to generate three manifolds is by gluing the graph complement. So our graph complement has boundaries which are four holes here, because the boundary of the three manifolds is the genus 6 holes 2 surface. Once we cut the surface along the decorated curve, and we get four holes here. And then we should glue those graph complement three manifolds to those four holes here. And the gluing can be carried out just like the graph shown here. And then we can, in general, we can generate many larger and larger three manifolds and it's corresponding to larger and larger simplicial complexes. And then on such a three manifold, we can identify a class of flat connections. They are corresponding to arbitrary simplicial geometry on four manifolds. Not only, so in each four simplex, they are constant curvature, but once you glue them, so you produce simplicial geometry, arbitrary geometry, approximately. And those geometries are all corresponding to a certain class of flat connections on certain three manifolds. And then on those three manifolds, sorry?
So this is very nice. So Ben, I mean, in the previous transparency, when you had this commuting diagram between EPRL and what you are doing, that was just for a single four simplex. Now you are gluing this four. I mean, you are morally gluing these four simplexes, right? So in the old, in the previous case, when there is single four simplex, you have to take the limit where J is very large. Is that requirement now on slide 28, doing it this way? That requirement has gone.
Well, if one do vision graph, yes, one needs to take large J to reproduce, double scaling limit to reproduce the classical radical. But here, what I said is that I rather want to consider a holomorphic 3D block instead of considering Chen-Simons evaluation of vision graph. So this holomorphic 3D block has much nicer properties.
Right. And looking at it from this way, then, you're looking at it from the holomorphic 3D block rather than, you know, looking directly in terms of simplicial complexes. But if I were to look at these two complex in the spin form, a la EPRL, if you like, where you're really having many, many four simplices, then is it correct to say that what you're doing is equivalent to allowing arbitrary J's and not only allowing just for large J's in order to arrive at the result at the bottom of the transparency 28?
Yeah, it's an arbitrary J because, for example, this holomorphic 3D block, it's a function on the boundary data U, the boundary flat connection data. And these flat connection data is related, morally relates to the J, and here it's a function on arbitrary U. So it's you can view that morally it's a function on arbitrary J.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. And then this holomorphic 3D block in the asymptotic expansion is the leading order of Einstein Red action on the entire simplicial complex for Einstein Hilbert action. For Reggie. Okay, so let's come to next slide. So we finish the main part of this talk. So in the next three slides, I come to something I'm currently working on, and to find some consequence of such underlying mathematical structure being quantum curve and holomorphic 3D block behind loop quantum gravity. So it turns out such a mathematical structure relates loop quantum gravity to the string and M theory, and also has a dual formulation in terms of supersymmetric gauge theory. So let's come to next slide. So such a relation goes through something called 3D corresponding in string theory. So let's give a very brief introduction for this subject. So let's consider M theory in 11 dimensions. So one of the elementary building blocks for M theory is something called M5 brain. So you can view this M5 brain as a six-dimensional submanifold embedded in 11-dimensional space-time and with certain fluctuations, so such a six-dimensional manifold has some dynamics, has some fluctuation in the 11 dimensions, and the infrared fixed points for such a dynamic gives so-called six-dimensional super-conformal field theory, which certain gauge theory. And such a superconformal field theory has 16 supercharges, which is maximal supersymmetric for a gauge field. And then we can compactify and we consider these N5 brains on specific background. So we compactify these N5 on the background, which is M3, which is it is the arbitrary three manifold and product with a 3D ellipsoid. And one can also replace the second factor by S2 cross S1 or R2 cross S1, and we get also the same consequences. And once we, so there are two factors in this background, so you have two choices of compactification. So you can compactify M5 on ellipsoid, so you get some effective theory on three manifolds, which is exactly a Chen-Simon theory on three manifolds with complexified gauge force. And you can also do another compactification by compactifying M5 on three arbitrary three manifolds on the first factor, and then what you get is the three-dimensional N equals 2 supersymmetric gauge theory. So this such a supersymmetric gauge theory is labeled by M3 because it depends on the detailed structure of three manifolds. And it is N equals 2 on three dimensions, so it means it's a superconformal field theory with four supercharges. And then here what you are doing is actually two different compactifications of the same theory. And then the two theories downstairs must be equivalent. So in the sense that the Chen-Simon partition function is equivalent, is equal to a supersymmetric partition function of this 2C gauge theory on ellipsoid. And secondly, the ground state of the two theory must be isomorphic. The modulized state of ground state must be isomorphic. So the flat connection, modulized state of flat connection on such a three manifold with complexified gauge loop must be isomorphic to the 2C modulized state of the 2C gauge theory on the right hand side. And certainly, the holomorphic 3D block actually equals to a 2D partition function on R2 plus S1 with certain boundary 2D ground state alpha, which is also labeled in the branch in Chen-Simon theory. So let's come to the next slide. The one slide before was some top-down approach for 3D correspondence, and in order to get a concrete property for the 3D gauge theory labeled by three manifolds, and one has to go through some bottom-up approach for constructing concretely such a 3D gauge theory. So such a construction is called Limov-Vyotov-Zhukov construction. The result of the construction is a three-dimensional N equals 2 superconformal field theory with abelian gauge theory. And it is a gauge theory labeled by three manifolds. Given a three manifold, you have a 2D gauge theory. You have a superconformal field theory labeled by such a three manifold. And the construction goes through the following way. So given arbitrary three manifolds, you can make ideal triangulation for such a three manifold, and the result is a set of tetrahedra. And then you can associate for each tetrahedra a three-dimensional N equals 2 chiral multiple. A three-dimensional N equals 2 chiral multiple has the same field content as four-dimensional N equals 1 chiral multiple, just a scalar and fermion and auxiliary field. And when you're gluing those tetrahedra to form a three-manifold, and it corresponds in the gauge theory language, gauging such a chiral multiple and plus put in some superpotential. And then what you have is a three manifold with a triangulation, and then you can produce UV Lagrangian for such a 2D gauge theory. And a consequence for such a construction is that a Buckner move equals to something called 3D mirror symmetry. So let me just explain it very briefly. So because a Buckner move, 2-3 Buckner move relates to different triangulations. So for two different triangulations, you can write down by using such a construction two different UV Lagrangian for the 2D gauge theory. And then it turns out, because of it's a consequence of such a construction, such a cool UV Lagrangian has UV gauge theory has exactly the same infrared fixed point, just like the figure on the right, RG flow for these two UV gauge theories. And this is something called three-dimensional mirror simulation. It's just the two, it means that two UV gauge theory has exactly the same infrared fixed point. And then the infrared fixed point, at the infrared fixed point, you have a super conformal field theory. That is the infrared super conformal field theory is the gauge theory labeled by three dimensional. And then in this game, you realize the previous property. And firstly, the Suti Lagrangian, the Suti modulized space of such a with the resulting gauge theory, for the resulting gauge theory, can be embedded in the modulized space of flat connection on three dimensions. So this is the embedding. It's not exactly isomorphism because there are some certain branches it's missing. But those branches are, for example, the Abelian flat connection. Abelian flat connection play no role in our previous game. And secondly, the Suti partition function on the ellipsoid equals to the Suti partition function, the Chen-Simons partition function with a certain truncation on the three manifold. And thirdly, the holomorphic 3D block on three manifold equals to the Suti partition function on R2 plus F1 with certain boundary Suti bound state. So here, this is the introduction for the 3D correspondence. So because of this 3D correspondence, we have the relation between the quantum gravity and the super conformal field theory on three dimensions. Let's come to the next slide, the last slide. And then, so this is the relation between four-dimensional SOG and three-dimensional super conformal field theory. So because firstly, classically, we know that the loop quantum gravity vacua, they are simplicial geometries on the simplicial complex, and because our classical correspondence, so we know that they are, those simplicial geometries are equivalent to flat connection on three manifolds, and then by 3D correspondence, and so flat connection are Suti vacua in certain Suti gauge theories on three dimensions, in three dimensions. Therefore, the loop quantum gravity vacua, they are embedded in a Suti vacua in certain Suti gauge theories, supersymmetric gauge theories. And secondly, in quantum level, we have loop quantum gravity partition function and or spinform amplitude. Our previous argument identify such a partition function with the Chen-Simon partition function of three manifold, and then by 3D correspondence, the Chen-Simon partition function equals to the Suti partition function of a certain Suti gauge theory in three dimensions. And then, therefore, our spinform amplitude can be identified as a certain supersymmetric partition function of Suti gauge theory. And then, in the semi-classical limit, that the Suti partition function gives radiation as a leading order expansion. Okay, I think that's all I want to say. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Which of these oscillations are new?
Sorry? Can you say again your question?
So the last relations between the SLCC Chen-Simon partition function and the supersymmetric partition function, are these new?
Well, they are relatively new. I mean, you can see one slide before. I list all the references. They are, 2011, 2012. Well, they are relatively new. And of course, this 3D correspondence is still an active research area. There's, the story is not finished. Not finished.
So could this correspondence enable us to calculate some things in the quantum gravity using the conformal field theory?
Well, this is something I'm trying to work on right now. I mean, so we can construct such a CC gauge theory, and we want to look at, for example, the the continuum unit and try to look at how it goes when the triangulation goes larger and larger and more and more continuous, and to find a theory language for such a procedure.
Very beautiful. Thank you.
Okay, so let's see, two questions. The first is about slide 31. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So previous slide, you had a nice relation between the super gravity theory, right? In the Suzy partition function, supersymmetric partition function, and the relation between these five brains and. Okay, and then the last slide, again, you have the Suzy partition function and the John-Simons partition function on N3 and so on. But in between, you had the slide that Lee was just referring to, 31. And could you explain how this slide fits into the slide 30 and 32?
Okay. So in slide 30, so this is kind of top-down approach for 3D correspondence, kind of prediction of string theory or M theory, that predicts that there should be a correspondence or a conjecture that there is such a correspondence by the argument, the different compactification of M5 brain dynamics. However, and because this is very general and it's valid for arbitrary string manifolds. And then it makes a construction of, I mean, one cannot construct from this approach the Suzy gauge theory on three dimensions. Because it's too general. I mean, arbitrary spring manifold, a compactification of M5 on arbitrary spring manifold, this is very complicated. So it's very hard in this way to concretely construct, for example, the Lagrangian of such a Suzy gauge theory. And then to really construct, but this is some kind of deadline. So to really concretely construct such a Suzy gauge theory, one have to go through slide 31, which is the bottom-up approach, so which is somehow independent from the string theory or M theory prediction in one slide before, but realize the relation. And such a construction, this is the Gukov-Diotto Dimov's construction, which it's the bottom-up approach by giving arbitrary three manifold and, well, construct concretely for the Lagrangian for such a Suzy gauge theory. And this is something, well, I'm able to do to really construct the Lagrangian for the Suzy gauge theory.
I don't know this subject very well, then the question is, is a key simplification that you're looking at UN gauge theory in slide 31, whereas you're not making such a... Yeah, that's it. Okay. Jorge, you were saying something?
No.
Okay, no. So then I think I want to go back to the main question that I've been asking all along. I mean, all these things look beautiful, but I don't understand conceptually what is happening. Because you started by... with the four simplex, and we all, I think we agree now, that with the four simplex, it is just geometry of constant curvature. And there's no direct physics in it. And the direct physics is coming at this slide where you did everything which was just gluing, right? I mean, slide 28.
Yep.
But then what did you do in order to get in the real physics of Einstein gravity? So this gluing must have some... Yeah, so something specific which knows about Einstein gravity versus some other gravity, right?
Yes. Well, my experience of spin foam is like, so firstly you need a large complex, an arbitrary number of protein pieces, and then you make the gluing and write down the spin foam amplitude for the complex on the complex. And with the summing over J, for example. And then this somehow, and before summing over J, you only have, or you may like to say, it's kinematical level, and all those geometries there, And with the ready action on the exponential at the leading order before summing over J. But then when you perform summing over J, then
Can I just briefly interrupt at this point? So if you say summing over J, are you summing over a complete basis? So in, for instance, in slide 28, are you, so from going from the left picture to the right, are you summing over over a complete basis in your Hilbert space, or just, or somehow projecting to those boundary states that represent three geometries or tetrahedra or your geometric building block. So is there some kind
of? Yeah, 28 is before summing over J. I mean, morally in the language of string form, because J are corresponding to the boundary data U. And this 28 is before summing over J. So these are, yeah. So, I mean, well, I mean, you need to impose the boundary data as well. I mean, you may call it projection, or, but you have to impose the boundary data, boundary condition. Yeah, and for the experience of informs that once you're summing over J, then you have summing over geometries in a proper way. And then you have dynamics. You can have the Einstein Einstein equations coming up if you take the right limit.
Since you have been sort of saying several times, you know, morally, you know, because that has to do with the correspondence between your constructions, which involve flat connections of three manifolds, and then simplicial geometries that feature in spin form. So if I were to forget about spin form for a minute, and we're just looking at your construction, then let me put some words in your mouth and let me see if you agree with them, that I feel that a strong claim is being made, namely, that if we just look at a single four simplex, the correspondence of the single four simplex for the flat connection of three manifolds, then you are just looking at something which is kinematical, which just has to do with constant curvature geometry and nothing more. And there's no equation being solved. But then you are saying that there is a natural way of gluing these flat connections of three manifolds shown on figuratively on slide 28, mathematically natural way of gluing it, such that automatically you get Einstein gravity. That is to say, it seems to me that you are claiming that for a single, the analog of the simple single four simplex, which would be just one of the pieces on the left-hand side of the diagram, there is really no kind of physics. There are no field equations there. It is just geometry. But your gluing rules produce Einstein theory or Einstein dynamics in the Regge approximation. That is what is being claimed as far as I can see. And do you agree with these words? Because it's a very strong claim. So.
The holomorphic 3D block, even in the four simplex level, this is also contains dynamical information or some information, and because that corresponds to the spin form the vertex, right? I mean, the spin form amplitude are built from the vertex amplitude. So in some sense, also it contains some dynamical. I mean, at least contain all the quantum corrections.
Can I ask the question a different way? The way with the arrow in the direction it is on slide 28, you take the constant curvature four simplices, this constant curvature connection on these embedded three manifolds, and you glue them together in such a way that you keep the condition of constant curvature on three manifolds throughout the embedding of the three manifolds in the four manifolds. Now, that produces you a set of simplicial manifolds with a boundary condition on the three manifolds. But maybe it's not completely general. Maybe not every simplicial four manifold can be so constructed.
Arbitrary four manifold. Well, I mean, for arbitrary simplicial complex, we can always associate a three manifold.
Yes, but you may not be able to continue the condition that the curvature restricted to the C-manifold is constant.
Can I say it again? Sorry, it's hard to hear. Sorry.
You have more than you have a graph embedded in the boundary of the format of your superficial four manifold. Can you thicken it out and take a boundary and you get a three manifold? And you could, I agree, you could always do that. But can you always, for an arbitrary choice of the space-time connection on the four manifold, can you satisfy your boundary condition that when you restrict to the three manifold that we just described and pull back the curvature onto the three manifold that is constant, if the connection in the four manifold is completely general?
I'm not sure. Well, I mean, maybe the confusion is that, I mean, actually this three manifold is not the boundary of the four manifold. On the single four simplex level, it is. It can be viewed, maybe it can be viewed as the boundary of four simplex. But in the superficial complex case, the three manifold is not the boundary of the four manifold. So
the left hand side, of these figures are just really three-dimensional things, which only are capturing the fact that the holonomies that are being used in spin forms and so on are really can be visualized as coming from flat connections on some genus surface across R. So one calculation is the three-dimensional calculation is done on the left-hand side, and the four-dimensional calculation is done on the right-hand side. And it is only the configuration spaces and the phase spaces that have relations with each other. Is that correct, Mushin?
Yeah. This is right. Yeah.
You know, I think I understand that. The question is, can every Regi geometry? I understand you can get a Regi geometry that way, but can every Regi geometry be done that way? Can every solution to the discrete Einstein equation be done that way? Or do you just get a solution to the Regi equation?
Yes, and for all the, I mean, all the radio action, I mean, obtained by gluing forcing pieces, I mean, constant curvature forcing pieces, and it's all in the parametrized by flat connector.
Yes, but that might be just a subset of the critical points of the Regi action. There might be other critical points of the Regi action that can't be so constructed.
I'm not sure.
Every Regi geometry is really realized by Mushin's construction. But as I understand it, there may be more general things which are also realized, right, which are people call, as you very well know, right? I mean, the things that Laura is talking about all the time. I mean, the things which are not Regi geometries, more general geometry.
The boundary, I mean, maybe they are also, they should be also realized, inside, for the flat connection, and, they should be also realized. But here, I mean, what we're talking about is by imposing the boundary condition and some strong condition, we only select those flat connections for some ready ones. So that's the statement here. There are more generalized things, also realized things, flat connection, I think. Yes.
Are you done, Lee, about this question, or do you want to continue?
I'm confused, but I think it's my private confusion, so I won't impose it on anybody.
All right. So, Mushin, it seems so non-trivial, so I'm still trying to understand the kind of where the soul of the idea is. And you're saying that even if I looked at one, the equivalence of just one four simplex, then your construction in terms of the flat connection of three manifold that you have, just that construction already has information about the EPRL vertex amplitude. Is that what you just said, or did I mishear you?
Yeah, in some sense, yes. Something here. So, yeah, basically because of, to clarify this one, is that because of the EPRL, uniform amplitude is basically defined by a certain Wilson graph operator. I mean, by taking connection trivial, then you have from the Wilson graph operators, and you have the EPRL. And then it turns out those Wilson graph operators, the role played by those Wilson graph operators are imposing the boundary conditions for three manifolds. It turns out that they are playing this kind of role. And then those boundary conditions select the holomorphic 3D block, which we discussed here. And so somehow that's the underlying relation between EPRL, and that's why EPRL is sensitive, right? And
the holomorphic 3D block is just a phase space, a flat connections, right? I mean, just constructing that. I mean, and then you're choosing a Lagrangian submanifold in it, etc. But it's just a phase space of flat connections on a genus G surface. And so that doesn't have any information like EPRL amplitude, which is supposed to be kind of dynamics in four-dimensional gravity.
It's not just the phase space. There's the Lagrangian. I mean, it satisfies a constraint equation defined by quantizing Lagrangian submanifold.
Yeah.
And also satisfying the boundary.
But Lagrangian choice of, so if you are saying that choice of Lagrangian submanifold encapsulate the physics, which is morally equivalent to the EPRL amplitude, that's a strong statement. It will be beautiful if it is true. But is that what is really happening here?
So we get holomorphic 3D block, and we pick up this holomorphic 3D block from two facts. So firstly, the Lagrangian submanifold, which is the operator constraint equation. Secondly, the boundary condition. Yeah. And actually, the EPRL construction corresponding to the boundary condition. And this Lagrangian submanifold, this operator constraint equation, is something additional. And maybe underlying EPRL. I mean, I didn't completely realize this picture in EPRL, but maybe also underlying EPRL somewhere. But it's very hard to see in EPRL, because EPRL is like a BF theory. I mean, makes connection completely trivial. So it's some kind of singular limit from this perspective. So this is very hard to see how this Lagrangian,